Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable, and welcome to our program today. We have I think a great show. I looked at this on paper and I thought, "Ooh, that's a good show." And so it's now we just have to bring it to fruition and not screw it up. And we'll do our best to do that. We have a wonderful panel. I'll introduce them to you in a moment. Also, all you have to do to be a part of that group and to share your thoughts on the subjects that we talk about today is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We would love to hear from you, as always, as we embark on what is going on in our world as of July 10th, 2025. Let me introduce the group to you. Teresa Bourgeois is here, public policy and communications expert. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? How are things? What have you been up to?
I'm doing well. I had a very fun thing happen to me yesterday.
What happened?
I have little free, we have little free libraries around Cohoes. You know, our library was shut down a long time ago and concerned about access to, and so a bunch of volunteers got together. We put little free libraries around the city.
So little boxes that little go boxes. On people's lawns, and you open them up, and there's all kinds of literary goodness.
Leave a book, take a book. In our case, I found a design that had three shelves.
Oh, nice.
Top shelf, adult books, middle shelf for tweens, and the bottom shelf where the little kids could reach in for the little ones.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, three shelves. And so I go around and I try to find affordable books so I can fill up the little free library. And you've been very gracious with adult books. Thank you very much for that. Yeah. But I was in need of children's books.
Sounds like I'm a porn dealer, doesn't it? You've been very good with the adult books. Yeah, no, but go ahead.
This is becoming a long story, but I was so overwhelmed. Anyway, I stopped at this place. It all they called Primo Deals, which is a fun little place because I knew they sell books. And I was looking for books. I was talking to the person. And the owner overheard me, and she donated more than 20 books to our little free library.
Oh, that's really great.
And I was able to fill up the empty
shelf.
That's
a random act of kindness.
I just thought, in the world where everything is kind of, you know, sad and not great to have this. And I said, well, I have to pay her. So, oh, no, no, no. She loved little free libraries. It was the nicest.
Primo Deals on Fuller Road?
On Fuller Road. It's right next door to the Restore, the Habitat for Humanity Restore.
Yeah, well, shout out to them for being
just
nice.
For kindness. And for kindness.
Sweetness and helping get some good books out into the world.
I was so happy. In any case, I just thought, isn't it a nice act of kindness?
These are all around Cohoes?
Yes, they're in parks. They're in this one in particular that was empty. It's empty a lot because there are lots of kids right around there. It's called Craner Park. Actually, Colonel Craner, this is way too much detail, but Colonel Craner, he was a POW with John McCain, right next to John McCain.
Oh, wow.
Remember they were in the Haigon?
Yeah.
Hanoi Hilton, yeah. Which was horrible. And so they could never speak, but they tapped to each other in code. And that's how they communicated for a couple of years when they were both held in
Craner Park.
Craner Park. It's named after him. But, there are a number of parks around the city, and I go around and try to keep them straight, and other people just put them in, take them out.
That's wonderful.
Anyway, well, just thank you to the anybody who fills up Little Free Libraries, and particularly for this wonderful act of kindness. It made me really happy. So
that's
random.
Really, really sweet. Thank you for sharing.
A little joy in the world.
Thank you. I'm glad you gave it early because
we're going to
knock the hell out of it in about 2 seconds.
I got a lot of bad stuff. Don't worry.
All right. Well,
thank you for letting me share because we need happiness.
We also, speaking of happiness, we welcome former Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, to the show. Hello, Judy.
Hello, Joe. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, good to have you here. Thank you very much for being with us. Is Grandma Camp over?
Yes, but there's I do every year. I do Grandma Camp. It was cut short because somebody got sick, so we're having another round of Grandma Camp later in the summer. The key feature of Grandma Camp is, you know, you can do whatever you want. You can eat sugary cereals, and we got to fire up the cotton candy machine. So.
Oh, that'll be.
That's
cool.
Why they love Grandma Camp, and Grandma loves them.
Well, they were out foresting the other day, weren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, that's right. We cut down a tree. We have a large property, and we cut trees for firewood. And so we cut down a tree so they could play on it.
Oh, that's cool. That's really neat. Well, very cool.
We look
forward to Grandma Cam Part 2. I love seeing the pictures. They're great. Great updates on Facebook. Dr. Karen Riedel joins us, Associate Professor of Government at Dutchess Community College, and since 2023 has been President of the World Affairs Council of the Mid-Hudson Valley. Did I get all of that right, or has that changed?
I'm actually a professor now.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Okay, professor. Congratulations.
Well, thanks
great.
Very much.
Very nice. Good morning. Welcome. How are things?
Things are... You know, I actually enjoyed hearing about the free libraries, and I'm going to bring all the books that I've been collecting, and I'm looking for good readers for next time I see you.
Oh, so you're so kind. Thank you.
Thanks so much for the...
Thank you. I love them. Yes. I love them.
All right. Let's get to the stories of the day, and they're kind of all over the place today. I realized this as I was putting the list together last night, and, you know, things that have come into the news and then have stayed in the news and things that are, have erupted. And so I want to start with a story that I think, I don't know how much time we need to spend on it because we knew this was going to take place, but yesterday, the administration has decided to take steps to target two officials who investigated Donald Trump. And it's unclear whether moves targeting the former FBI Director James Comey and the former CIA Director John Brennan will lead to charges, but they appear to be targeting officials who oversaw the investigation of the 2016 Trump campaign connection to Russia, examining the actions of Comey and Brennan. John Ratcliffe, the CIA director and a harsh critic of his Democratic-appointed predecessors, has made a criminal referral of Brennan to the FBI, accusing him of lying to Congress. The Bureau is also scrutinizing Mr. Comey for his role in the Russia investigation, other officials said, although the exact basis for any inquiry remains unclear. Even if it is unclear whether the moves will lead to charges, they are among the most significant indications that President Trump's appointees intend to follow through in his campaign to exact retribution against his perceived enemies. But didn't we already know that? I mean, didn't we know that through Columbia? Didn't we know that through Harvard? Didn't we know that through the investigation into Joe Biden and his cognitive awareness? This is not new, is it, Judy?
You know, I think we're just so naive that we thought, no, that couldn't be true. They couldn't possibly do that. That is so wrong that he wouldn't dare do it. But in time, it's like losing the football. You know, he got us again. Yeah, he's going to do it. I mean, I think it serves two purposes. It's just to hassle these guys, make them pay for lawyers, make them, you know, agonize, because it's never pleasant to be, you know, hauled in to be investigated. The other thing is to keep this notion alive that Russia wasn't in favor of him in the 2016 election. I mean, we keep forgetting that, whether or not there was any collusion between the campaign and Russian officials, you know, that's still debatable. But, I mean, certainly Russia wanted Donald Trump to win, and it was clear from, you know, all of the investigation. So he's just trying to hassle him. This is just the start. We're only in the first year of his term, only like 5 or 6 months. I mean, it's going to get worse and worse for those people. And what it does is put a really strong damper on anybody speaking out against him going forward, because you're worried about it. It's not pleasant to be investigated by the FBI. Hopefully they'll just dismiss this as baseless.
But also, yes, it certainly dampens that. But it also takes our eyes away from what else is going on, right, Teresa?
Well, that's exactly right. When I saw this story, I thought, okay, what is he trying to distract our attention from? Is it his failure on tariffs? Because remember, 90 deals in 90 days. 90 days is up, and there is not a single formal deal. There's one that's a outline of a deal. So is it the failure to broker a ceasefire in Gaza? Remember, Netanyahu's here, but he came to the United States, and normally there would have been some, you would have thought there'd be something announced if he's going to come for a visit. Not one, but two meetings, no announcements, except for that there are no deals, that there's no deals to get the hostages out. There's no resolution to the horrific situation, the humanitarian situation there in terms of the Palestinians getting access to food, and no ceasefire. Is he trying to draw attention away from the federal response to the flooding in Texas and his plan to eliminate FEMA, send it back to the states? It should be their responsibility. Well, you see something like this and you know why. Or what about the cuts in the National Weather Service? Trying to draw attention away from the rescissions bill. As people learn more and more about what's in it, it becomes more and more concerning. There's a long list. Distract from the Epstein files. A number of people say, maybe he's trying to draw attention away because the MAGA crowd is really distraught about what's going on with the Epstein files. Or maybe about the Ukraine. I mean, the list goes on and on. But the thing that worries me so much is, and I think the more attention needs to be paid to this because it's becoming normalized, the just blatant politicization, if I could say that word properly, of the Justice Department. The fact that it has happened so deeply and so swiftly is really, really troubling. And I hope if any listeners here, lawyers who can maybe talk about this, but I think that we need to be very, very worried about the swift and complete shift from the Justice Department being essentially an independent entity to being part of his, both literally and figuratively, his law enforcement, his legal team. Right? Because a lot of people who are personal legal team now have shifted over. And these same people who were being paid to defend him, in personal legal issues, are now being paid by taxpayers' dollars to try to address these issues and rewrite the history about Russia's interference. And shouldn't the President of the United States and the FBI be concerned about Russian interference, which no doubt is still going on? And on the same day, but on the same day, the same week that he's saying how upset he is with Putin, he continues to dismiss the notion that Russia is interfering in our country, whether it's in our elections or our day-to-day business. This is a serious problem, a whole series of serious problems.
Karen?
Oh, I have to let all of this.
She's like, Carrie, she finally died.
I'm fired up about this. Right? It was very clear during Trump's campaign that this is what he was going to do. So it is not surprising. What is surprising, and maybe not surprising, but it keeps shocking me that there is no one within the administration to push back, to help vent whether this is a move that is desirable for the administration or for the country. This is driven by John Ratcliffe the CIA director, who has moved forward with the cases and asked the FBI to investigate Mr. Brennan and Mr. Comey. There seems to be everything you listed there, all these concerns that we have. There doesn't seem to be anyone in the administration who ever asks the administration to pause and consider the implications of the actions that they're undertaking.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that has amazed me about this, about the Trump administration since well before 2016 when he was elected, that all of the conventional, and it's worked for him, I'm not going to, certainly not the case, but all the conventional ideas that you have of oh, we're gonna bet something before we say it. We're going to make sure we have our facts straight before we say it. If we put this number out, it's going to be the best number that we can come up with. And what we have found out over the last 10 years is, yeah, that doesn't matter.
But how far do they bend the rules before they break these departments? Right? I mean, what's it going
to
take?
I mean, I don't mean to be the cynical jerk, but haven't they already broken these departments?
I think the Justice Department, there was a person interviewed last night, I won't get his name right, but he has resigned, basically pushed out of the Justice Department. And he wasn't one of the top echelon people. And he wrote a piece in the paper basically saying, pay attention. There's a really, what's going on in the Justice Department is deeply troubling. And he was asked, well, why did you do it? He said, well, because I was asked to. Well, who were you asked by? He said, a lot of people within the Justice Department, not the top political appointees, but the line prosecutors, the line investigators. He said that they feel like the top people left, abandoning them, and didn't go out and speak about what's happening inside to try to stop some of it, and that maybe he could or should. But I think there, you know, this alarm needs to be sounded about the misuse of these agencies in the quest for Trump's personal, you know, vindictive effort. And these are costly, the costly in dollars. This thing has been studied to death. Right, there's nothing new that's going to come out of this. It's been studied by a special prosecutor. It's been researched. There've been hearing after hearing after hearing, all with a heavy price tag. But also, what's the cost of shifting the focus of the department? Because everybody who's working on this is not working on something else. Right? It's like shifting a lot of the resources toward deportation of people. Right? Everybody, it's just a misplaced use of resources, and it's degrading the institutions by politicizing them.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We will talk more about this. We'll welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we welcome your thoughts. We'll get to those, and then we'll move on to other topics as well, as we have much to discuss on this Thursday morning. Again, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue after this news break from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Teresa Bourgeois, Judy Patrick, and Dr. Karen Riedel with us. And we are very happy to have you here as well. Panel at WAMC.org. If you would like to add your thoughts, panel at WAMC.org. It is interesting to me that if you think that and maybe this is just naive on my part, but that if you're somebody like James Comey, who, you know, I think we all have our thoughts on James Comey, and maybe not all good thoughts about James Comey, but you do think that once you've left and, you know, you're out writing mystery novels and, you know, you're out on the boat, that none of this is going to come back, meaning that you're done. You've served your time. You're done.
You're free and clear.
And then you're not.
You got to wonder. So all the things that are happening in these first two years of the Trump administration, if the Democrats, you know, win the House or win the Senate in midterms, what kind of investigations are they going to do? And are they going to be, you know, described as political or witch hunts? And when they might be very legitimate investigations, it is so hard to, you know, in this muddle that we're in the political world, what's going to happen going forward. But clearly, this is, he said it was retribution. And we as a country, I didn't think, believed in retribution. I often wonder how on top of things Donald Trump himself is, or whether or not he gave marching orders a long time ago. He seems like he's not a detail-oriented guy. You know, when you ask him a specific question like, who authorized the suspension of arms shipment to Ukraine? I don't really know. You know, the things he doesn't know amaze me still. So how intimately he's involved with this or whether his lieutenants are doing this is a question for me.
But that is one of the main concerns, and that's what I was trying to say earlier. He may not be giving the marching orders anymore, but he has followers in the administration, and they are seeing through what he wants.
Or what he thinks they want.
Right.
Well, I think the issue on the Ukraine authorization is who really did that, because did Hegseth even know? And there's a person below Hegseth who has an agenda, and which, you know, had been the Project 2025 agenda, which they want to shift the focus to China. And certainly this administration, though they said they were going to shift the focus to China, the focus has really been on the Middle East, on the one side, on the business deal side, because of Trump's own interest in his own business deals. Remember going to Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Qatar, right, and making all those deals, as many deals for his family as he did for the country, and some of that he did for the country we have concerns about because of, this gets into too much detail, but chip technology, and is he giving away some key chip technology in some of those deals? But more importantly, what's going on in Gaza with the Palestinians, what's going on in Israel, what's going on, you know, the bombing in Iran. You know, it's really just mired in the Middle East when they believe that the focus should be on China. And so did Hegseth even know that decision was made? If he did, why didn't he tell the president? If he didn't, how come he didn't know? And then the president, I thought was interesting, he said he didn't know. And then a few moments later, he said, well, if a decision like that was made, I'd be the one to make it, and I would know. Now, if President Obama had said that, or Biden had said that, or even Bush, there'd be days of headlines saying, what's wrong with him, right? Because it was totally nonsensical. But what happens, you know, it gets sane-washed by the media. And then, oh, this is just his way of negotiating. It's what's going on. And just remember, if the Justice Department is going to open up an investigation, a criminal investigation, traditionally, it's not discussed. It's not discussed until they're prepared to bring charges.
Well, that takes away all the fun.
Remember all the outrage with Comey, right, when he said he's going to investigate Hillary Clinton just before the election, when you don't do that?
Well, rightfully so, right?
Rightfully that he was going to investigate her, or rightfully that there was that outrage about him saying that?
There was outrage.
Yes, right, because that was norm-breaking. You don't do that and then say, well, we're going to have charges, but she's under investigation. Was he just appealing to his MAGA base? Because these guys, you know, the MAGA base really wants to go after these guys. I don't know. But it's not the right way to use the government.
Let's go to a letter from a listener whose name is Peter. Understand, nobody in the Trump administration is doing anything for the good of our country. They are a collection of grifters, sociopaths, and pathological liars. They are in their positions to get rich and to exercise power. Nothing they do should surprise you.
I think we're speechless, because it does seem to be that way, even though, you know, you want to believe otherwise. You know, I was listening to Tom Tillis today, you know, talking on CNN about how, well, you know, maybe Hegseth wasn't up for the job. But, you know, he only voted to confirm him based on what he knew at the time. Well, guess what? Most of us knew at the time he wasn't fit to be Secretary of Defense.
Well, that was a fascinating interview with Jake Tapper, because he was saying, well, you know, we knew he had problems with alcohol. We knew he had problems with he couldn't keep down a job. We knew that his record was very spotty. We didn't know this, but there was a lot of pressure put on us, and everybody said it was going to be okay. So I said, oh, okay. And then, but I knew he wasn't good for the job. And he said the same thing about RFK Jr.
Right. And talking about, and one of the charges they're trying to bring against Comey and Brennan is lying to Congress. Well, what about RFK telling Congress that he was, you know, he's not a vaccine denier? When he is a vaccine denier, let's be clear about that. The Tillis remarks. You know what? If you're going to admit blame, concede it. Say you screwed up and you shouldn't have. But no, he had to say, no, what I voted with what the information I had at the time. Well, you know, read the newspapers, watch the news.
You had enough, they had enough information at the time. And I'm glad you brought up RFK Jr. because the news out yesterday, which the U.S. has hit a new record. Right?
Of measles?
Number of largest, you know, record of measles in 30 years. Congratulations, new record. 30 years, she said cynically. 30 years. And what is going on? And now with this Supreme Court giving the green light to lay off all these people, there'll be further deep cuts within layoffs within HHS, Health and Human Services. And it's only going to get worse. And, you know, you have the same nonsense on vaccination as you do with going on in the FBI. And what does that do to line prosecutors? What is the day-to-day like for them? What kinds of pressures are they under to do things that they know aren't right, right? That they know aren't the norm. Focus on things that aren't the priorities, but are Trump's personal priorities.
In regard to Tilly's comments on Hoaxes, and his regret for voting for him and for Kennedy, I find it extraordinarily spineless to do this at this point after he decided not to run again. Only after it was made clear to him that Trump would support a more MAGA-oriented candidate. And this is the situation we find ourselves in, that only once they decide not to run, and only decide not to run when they know there's no chance, where they will face serious challenges because of the pressure put on them by the administration, that is when they speak out.
Well, I'm glad that he is speaking out, but what I worry about what was his calculation? Was he worried about personal threats? Because that's what happens when you speak out against Trump, and that's a serious problem in our country. But, I mean, we're talking about this, which I think we need to be, because I do think it's really affecting our judicial system. But in the process, we're not talking about the funding for deportation, right, which is outrageous. So we're not talking, I mean, there's so many other things that we're not talking about. But more importantly, there's so many other things that these agencies aren't focused on. And are they not focused on, is there anybody at the federal level focused on Russian interference in our country? Right now.
You know, Tillis wasn't even fully forthcoming with Tapper yesterday either, because, you know, Tapper pressed him on, well, who in the administration was doing this? He wanted him to name names. And Tillis is saying, well, that'll come later, which makes me think he's got a book deal coming. It's that'll be a classic scenario.
Yeah. Well, and you don't muddy the waters until you leave and you're gone. I mean, going back to my earlier Comey remark, where you think you think you're done, and then you're sucked back into the vortex. But
I have a hard time feeling sorry for Comey, but I do think this is bad.
Well, I have a hard time. Yeah, I said that. I have a hard time feeling sorry, and even Tillis. I mean, I just don't know how you can. Judy made this point brilliantly. Well, we all knew. Like,
right.
we knew.
They knew.
They knew. And, I mean, all the information was there. You needed the vice president to break the tie. Like, and Tillis could have changed the whole thing.
Right.
But that wasn't going to happen.
No. No, because he didn't have the political courage to do what's right. But how many of those things have happened? How many times have we said, we know that the discussion in the cloakroom is that they don't think that this is right? How many parts of the rescission bill do you know that these folks knew wasn't right? There's no doubt in my mind, if you had a vote on USAID, right? If you went into the cloakroom and show of hands in the Republican cloakroom, how many of you think it's good U.S. policy to dismantle USAID? I suspect a majority of the Republicans in the Republican cloakroom, meaning, you know, out off the Senate floor, in the, you know, the privacy of the cloakroom, a majority would raise their hands and say, I agree, you should not dismantle USAID, right? But they're not going to do that publicly because they're not going to go against him. And you could name 100 things, vaccinations. Do you think a majority of these people, or FEMA, do you think a majority of the senators believe you should dismantle FEMA, that the federal government should get out of the FEMA business. I thought that it was an amazing side part of a NPR story this morning where they said, yes, they are approving some FEMA funds, but not for resilience, not for building back, that the Trump administration is withholding funding for building back.
It's just for emergency.
Emergency threat response, and even doing that slowly. And
but the other person I want to throw into this is that you know, you're just like, well, who are you? Is Mitch McConnell. I mean, you know, think of what has come out of his mouth for so long, and now that he has backed off and isn't going to run again. Yeah, well, I wouldn't do that. Well, okay, where were you?
Deafening. Well, I think there's still too much of a deafening silence from him. But, you know, he did what he did on the Supreme Court, right, when he was in leadership, and he showed what he is and who he is. But.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll move on to other things. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we welcome you. And we'll get to that right after this.
Hey,
hey, boy. My steel cabin.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome you and we thank you very much for tuning in. We thank you for being with us and writing letters, panel at WAMC.org. David writes to us and says, I'm sorry, who hasn't lied to Congress? List, please. Oh, wait. Everyone has lied to Congress, from Supreme Court nominees to the woes minion. Heck, even Congress lies to Congress. That boat has left the harbor unpiloted and crewless. We will never retrieve the gravitas that Congress used to represent, showing that our country is cooked. It's hard to argue with that letter.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not a historian. But on that point, one thing that does interest me is I notice when I'm wonky. I watch sometimes congressional hearings. They don't seem to swear the witnesses in on a regular basis. And I just think at the beginning of every hearing, they should swear the witnesses in.
We swore in a president without a Bible.
Yeah. He
just saying
he didn't put his hand on
the Bible. Speaking of swearing, that president's got a foul mouth.
Yeah,
don't you think
where
it's getting more so?
Where is his mother with bar soap? Yeah, it seems.
I think he's.
I mean, I'm outraged until it frees us up to say what we want to say, on the radio, and then I'm all for it. So.
And what did the Putin administration? They had some great line about you know how he gets worked up or something like that.
Yes,
but he's just. Anyway, it's only 6 months. How much longer do we have?
Russ says, this is working as designed. The purpose of law enforcement under our one-party system is the preservation of power in the hands of the executive. All challenges to the party line must be suppressed with rigor. That from Russ. All right. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Go ahead.
I think we have to be cautious here about how far this is going, because it's the FBI, but also, I mean, I am fixated on the amount of money that ICE has. But look at all of our systems that are the level of disinformation, the use of retribution in the FBI and the law enforcement. The, you know, there's a small story about, well, you know how he has Truth Social, but now they've teamed up with Newsmax, which Trump has part ownership of. So it's controlling that additional communication systems. I mean, I just think we're moving in a very, very troubling direction. The most troubling, I think, is the amount of money that ICE now has. I just think that's, but I think what's going on with the FBI is part of a much larger, deeply concerning direction we're headed in.
I mean, that was one of the points that was made earlier, this week on the show of that, you know, what ICE was doing without being quote unquote fully funded of now, what are they going to do when they have even more money?
So data point that someone gave me, because I was trying to understand. According to, a friend of mine sent me this, according to think tank Global Firepower, I didn't even know that existed, $75 billion allocated to ICE in just the tax bill alone places it fourth place among the world's military defense budgets in 2025, tied with India. It's just ICE. As such, it represents more money than the defense budgets of all but U.S., China, and Russia. It's greater than Ukraine, which is $57.7 billion, which is fighting a war for its survival as a viable nation state. That's how much money that ICE has. And now I heard on the way in on NPR, I knew $46 billion for these private prisons, most of it going to two companies, both of which have troubling pasts. But they will then have more detention facilities than the federal detention prison system. ICE will have more detention beds than the federal prison system because of this threefold increase in funding that they've been given. I mean, why do they need that, and shouldn't we be worried about that? And just look at what happened in MacArthur Park, that show of force in MacArthur Park in L.A. Look what's happening all over the country. And Pam Bondi, what they were asking, was it Pam Bondi? Or it's, when they were asking about how ICE is arresting people on the streets with no clear markings in their uniforms and such, and isn't that a concern because anybody could say that they're ICE. She said she didn't know that was happening. What do you mean you don't know what's happening?
I just want to just...
I'm sorry, I went astray there, but I'm fixated on that.
I want to clarify one thing that we were talking about when we were talking about Tom Tillis. The interview that he did with Jake Tapper yesterday when she was talking about regretting the vote. In the interview, and this is true, and a listener brought this up, and they're absolutely right. The way he said he did not regret casting that vote. He did not regret casting the vote, given what he knew at the time. This is why we were saying before about, well, what didn't you know that we did? But now I have the information of him being a manager, and I don't think his probationary period has been very positive. Is there a probation?
Oh, wow.
Period?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like, that was the 90 thing days? That just like ding, ding, ding to me. Is there a probationary period?
Anyone looking at his record, his resume, would not think that's the resume of a Secretary of Defense. I'm sorry. Even putting aside what his mother said, even putting aside his, you know, the issues about his drinking in the past, whether he's overcome that or not, it just is not, he does not bring the managerial experience for
even
someone in that
job. Even putting aside what his mom said. I mean, that is just unbelievable, isn't it?
Where are we? This, like, the world is watching. The world is watching. It's a very dangerous world. And while this is happening here, what's happening around the world? In trade, people are realizing what chaos the trade system is here, and they're finding markets elsewhere. What's happening, you know, is that China is moving in where the U.S. is moving out.
And you know, Tillis didn't even have the guts to put the blame where the blame should rest, and that's on Donald Trump. He would say, oh, in the interview, he kept on cautioning that it was the people, he was getting bad advice by the people surrounding him, you know, that Trump was getting bad advice, that it wasn't necessarily Trump. And you have to wonder why, you know, why he feels the need to protect the president still. When, you know, as we say, the buck stops, you know, at the president. Let's make it stop there.
But what can be done about it? I mean, what can be done to deal with holding the Justice Department together? What can be done about the measles outbreak? Given at the federal level, they're not giving attention. Can the governors fill these gaps? What can be done about the situation with FEMA? What can be done about how do you protect innocent people being taken, you know, arrested and held by ICE? There was an interesting story yesterday where a community rebelled about this woman who, she'd been in the country for decades, and the country rebelled. And Steve Scalise was their congressperson, and I guess a huge number of people appealed to him. And finally, the woman yesterday was released because they said it was ridiculous. But what can we do about this?
I was looking for this quote as Judy was talking, but Taylor said yesterday, quote, "I don't have a problem with President Trump. I've got a problem with some of the people I consider to be amateurs advising him, and I want to make it very clear to them, when you act like the president when he's out of the room, you don't impress me."
What does that mean?
I'm having problems.
And
with
didn't
that.
He choose the people he surrounded himself with? Well, or the people who financed his campaign? I guess some of them chose the people he surrounded himself.
During the first administration, he still had actual advisors, many of whom he then fired. But it's like ever since the beginning
experience
of his
advisors.
But if those advisors are still the people who say, let's just play along with the logic. If those are the people that say that Hegseth is the best person for the job, then it is incumbent upon the then president to say no. But I think, yeah, blaming them as opposed to the president is interesting, as Judy noted. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll move on to other subjects. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Precisa tomar sorvete na lanchonete, andar com a gente, me ver de perto.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And let me introduce the group to you once again. Public policy and communications expert Teresa Bourgeois, former vice president for editorial development of the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, and Dr. Karen Riedel, professor of government at Dutchess Community College, and since 2023 has been the president of the World Affairs Council of the Mid-Hudson Valley. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And let us go to other stories that are making news on this Thursday morning. So I thought this was interesting because, I mean, I think it's obvious in many cases, but yet just sort of where we're headed here. We talked about this a little yesterday, but not in this particular context. This from the Washington Post. Some federal workers cried, some shook their heads and began updating their resumes. Others, including union leaders, vowed to fight, determined to hang on to government jobs that many took because they wanted to serve the American public. After the Supreme Court allowed President Donald Trump on Tuesday to resume firing government workers, federal employees rushed to signal group chats and anxious phone calls, trying to figure out what it meant for them. The court lifted a lower court order that had temporarily blocked the administration's plans to lay off thousands of federal workers, including at the State Department and the Social Security Administration, because the administration did not first consult with Congress, but few details were immediately available. Litigation will continue as the layoffs proceed at 19 agencies, according to the ruling, which drew dissent from one liberal justice. It marks the latest upheaval in a chaotic half year of Trump-driven downsizing of federal departments, which spurred lawsuits and court-ordered halts, followed by still other court counter offers and counter orders resuming the federal dismissals. And that is counter orders. The ruling may also usher in a new phase of more professionalized layoffs as opposed to the rapid error-filled slashing undertaken in the early months of the Trump administration. I don't know how they know that's going to happen, but okay. They say that often they were blaming, in that case, the very young members of DOGE, the cost-cutting team that was set up by billionaire Elon Musk, who has since departed government. And the workers, the quote that I used in the setup to this story from the Washington Post is a union leader saying, look, with this ruling, we are toast, meaning federal workers. Karen.
There are toast. I know there'll be individual cases fighting for their jobs, but I do hope they're all getting their resumes ready. And I'm sure they'll all find interesting, probably better paid jobs, because one of the incentives for attracting experienced employees to the federal government was that relative security that comes with federal employment, and that is gone. In the end, it's going to be the country, of course, that will see the consequences down the road. And given the experiences of just the last few days in Texas, for example, it is just mind-blowing to me that this is the way we're going, firing experienced employees who know the jobs inside out, who know the federal bureaucracies inside out, leaving the country less safe. Was I surprised about the Supreme Court ruling? Not at all.
Right.
Not at all. But it's. But I'm terribly concerned about the future of this.
You know, this generic idea of, you know, a bloated federal bureaucracy. Everybody is against that, and we want us to be more efficient. But I think the American public does not have a full grasp of what federal workers do. You know, they're the park rangers. There are so many people that perform basic services that you're not understanding. It all comes down to this conservative approach to government is the smaller the better, or like even the libertarian approach that no government is the best government. And you see, and Texas is a classic case of what happens when you have, you know, lax regulation or little government oversight, or let the camp decide where the best place to put the cabins are. I mean, that kind of mentality is what can lead to disaster. And I know that's it's a big step from, you know, cutting the federal workforce to, you know, little girls dying in a horrific flood. But I think it's part of the same approach to government. There's a reason we need government. There are basic services we rely on government to perform, and that helps us be a safer, better society. And I think the MAGA people especially need to understand that.
Teresa.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing is the Project 2025 playbook being implemented here. And one of the things that their goals was Russ Vought and J.D. Vance and that whole group of people. I think that Trump, you know, I don't think he pays attention to these details, but in the same hand, he's fine with it. Although when you ask him questions about it, he has no grasp of the depth of what's happening. But this is the outline in Project 2025. And one of the things that they were trying to do is drive out the quote unquote deep state, right? Free up all of these positions, and then they can backfill them with their own people who, if the provincials are still in there, this notion that the new people coming into the government had to take essentially what looks to be a loyalty test, right? And that's not what the federal government is supposed to be. And I know there's been discussion about, well, shouldn't the president have a right to hire and fire? Well, certainly there are what they call them plumb book positions, political positions, that an administration has a right to hire and fire. But these positions go way, way, way beyond that. And I think there has to be a distinction, because you need a core group of people who are there over time, who understand the day-to-day workings. And I thought there was a very interesting op-ed piece in the New York Times yesterday. It was titled, "As the Texas Floodwaters Rose, One Indispensable Voice Was Silent." And it talks about, and I keep hearing about this person from the Weather Service, whose job it was to make sure not to do the assessments, the weather assessments, but to make sure that those warnings got traction. He'd been there for 30 years. He was essentially forced out. His name is, I didn't know this until yesterday, but Paul Ura, long-serving meteorologist in charge of warning coordination. And he took an unplanned early retirement amid the budget cuts. And So there are people like him in the departments all over, whether it's HUD doing housing or HHS doing vaccinations or doing tracking of disease tracking, or if it's an EPA, or all across the agencies, these people who over time have specialties and they have a focus and they have a set of experiences that keep the place going. And if you take too many of those people out of the system doesn't work. And it becomes very, very costly. Costly in lives, costly in programs, costly in tracking of disease, and so on and so forth. I also thought it was interesting in this same piece, they talked about these, lesson that this a young digital creator from Doge learned during his work with Doge. I'm quoting here. He expected that as the government cleared out Deadwood employees, he'd write the software to do their jobs more efficiently. To his surprise, he found himself surrounded by people who, quote, loved their jobs and were motivated by a sense of mission. And he says, I think we have a bias as people coming from the tech industry where we worked as companies, you know, such as Google, Facebook. These companies, they have plenty of money, are funded by investors, and have lots of people kind of sitting around doing nothing, he told NPR. And so I think generally, I personally was pretty surprised, actually, at how efficient the government was. After speaking to a reporter, he was promptly fired. Isn't that astounding that he spoke out and then he was fired for saying that these people, in fact, were efficient? And so what's the price? What's the cost, right? The price is the cost of disasters, which far exceed the cost of these employees. And there's some prices we'll never know. It's the price of people in the intelligence community who are no longer there collecting an intelligence, right? It's the cost. Now the plan, the next round of cuts is cut more than 50% of HUD and eliminate, they want to, the Section 8 vouchers and the home program and community development block grants. So, you know, what's the cost of that? What's the cost of EPA regulations? They want to have fewer regulations so we can move more quickly. One of the things that's come up with these floods is that there's a pushback when the federal government tried to define these floodplains, because the states didn't like it because it made flood insurance more expensive. So they didn't want these areas designated as floodplains. But they clearly were floodplains, but they wouldn't allow them to put that on the map because it would have raised flood insurance. You know, those are regulations that save lives.
Anybody else want to add to that before we... Okay, I have a couple letters that I'd like to get to. Again, we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We go to, these letters are have some things to do with what we're talking about immediately and some in the past. Let's see. George, let's go with Fred, actually. Full disclosure, James Comey is my brother's brother-in-law. That's cool.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Please pump the brakes on the criticism of James Comey's actions in 2016. While his actions likely swayed the election, it was not out of any type of partisan interest. Comey is and was a decent and ethical person, an increasingly rare type of person in public service.
Hey, you know what? I agree. I actually liked Comey's book explaining his actions, and it did. He did talk about ethics a lot, so I thought it was very thought provoking. What he did on the election. I mean, yeah, Hillary's got a point, but and generally, I like him. I think he's cool on social media as well.
This from George. Joe seems to assume the Democrats will triumph at the midterms. When did I ever say that?
Well, I might have leaned into it a little bit because, you know, it seems...
Joe assumes nothing. I have stopped prognosticating because things just don't happen the way I often think they're going to happen. He's fooling himself, so I'm afraid is Teresa. One wishes she were a prominent lawyer rather than a seasoned Democratic political operative. with I am sure a capacity to make deals in the old American politics and government. This is a new world, completely venal. The world of New York City real estate, where honor is unknown. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that it's a Trump world now, mm-hmm. and we're using the old rule book, and not the New York City real estate broker rule book.
Well, I'm not a historian, but I guess if the one was here, they would say, you know, we've been around this before. I don't think there's been anything quite like this, but where rules were not upheld, right? And certainly real estate folks controlled. You think about the Gilded Age, right? They certainly controlled things then. I know that I'm regularly accused of being Pollyannish, and perhaps I am. Okay, I am. But I do think that we can't lose sight of what the core rules are. And we have to understand that when they're being bent, and is there a way to either get back to them or move forward in a way that there's still some fundamental fairness and that we retain our democracy? I mean, that's really what I'm trying to figure out how to do, how to retain our democracy. I don't know how people can see what's happening in the country. I don't know how the silence, and I feel like I'm not doing enough, the silence around these videos of people just being surrounded by masked people without clear markings that they are ICE, who grab them up and put them in vans, and then they disappear, and they seem to lose their rights. How many people right now are in a prison in El Salvador that the U.S. sent there, that we know that more than half of them don't have criminal records, violent criminal records, and may not have criminal records at all? Yet they're lingering there.
For life, perhaps.
And by all reports now from Brego being tortured, right? They have no business being there. Our tax dollars are paying for it. Or the woman who was let out yesterday after being detained, she's been here for a long, long time. Only 7% of the people, by their own data, only 7% meet the criteria that Trump said is a criteria, violent criminals that he's taking off the streets. So what about all of the others? What about the high school student?
Karen?
I want to pick up a little bit on what the caller is insinuating, I think, is that we need to start. And then the last time I came here on the show, I touched on that as well. It's like, what's the way forward? And Democrats are not providing us with a path forward. We're concerned about where we're at. And Theresa, you've done such an extraordinary job in pinpointing all these different areas. And I hope we're going to get to foreign affairs as well, because that is something that I am most concerned with. But what is the strategy in getting voters to come on board? What is the strategy on getting, actually, let me take a step back, because are we all seeing what is the country seeing what you laid out? Is really everybody seeing what ICE is doing, or is it just people like us who see it?
I think people are seeing what ICE is doing. I think they don't know what to do about it. I was at a 4th of July picnic. I was invited. The only person I knew was a person that invited me. But when I got there, bunch of people knew me from the show, right? And we ended up in these very interesting conversations. And the big thing they all said that they really want an understanding of is, okay, what can they do? So I think there are people who are concerned about what they see that ICE is doing, but what can they do? Can they do something like the Archbishop in California did, in I think it was San Diego, where he brought a bunch of clergy together and they just bore witness? Can they do what the community in Texas did, which when they seized this woman who'd been a pillar of the community, volunteer, active in the community, they just did not remain silent. Same thing with the high school student in Massachusetts. What are the mechanisms? Or what do you do when you know in advance that all these people are going to lose their Medicaid coverage because they're going to make it so complex to do the paperwork? Well, what can be done not by the government, if the government's not doing it, but what can the rest of us do? Can you put together teams of people who help with the paperwork? Can some really smart young person at RPI figure out some sort of app to help them with that, right? I mean, I think those are the kind of questions. But I also do think that members of Congress, the Democrats, while it may not be so clear, I think that led by Congressman McGovern and people like that, I know Congressman Taco, they laid out a whole series of amendments to the rescission bill that force these votes to hold. So will they go back at election time and hold them accountable for the kinds of things that they voted for as this bill becomes implemented more and more? So I think that there are efforts to raise awareness about what they're doing. I just think we need to figure out more pathways for everyday people to engage in a response that improves the situation. I don't know how to do that yet.
You know, the data shows that most Americans are tuning out of the news. They're inconvenient truths for them, and they're just not paying attention. They're living their regular lives. They don't, I make the point, to avoid the news, you're almost complicit because I think your job as a citizen is to pay attention to what's happening in the world. The other problem I'm finding with the videos is there are so many deep fake videos out there that are not true, that I'm tending to not look at any videos unless I see them on a legitimate news site. It's that's my advice to people. If you see a video, go to mainstream media and see if they're running it as well, because they typically will vet them. There are tons of deep fake videos on these Texas floods as well. So it's almost like you can't trust anything you see anymore.
This is a really lousy answer to what you just brought up, Teresa. But, I mean, I think part of the problem is the problem, which is that because they're unmarked and there's no identification on them at all, getting to Judy's point, you don't know, right?
Well, there was a report the other day I found chilling, which is they've already, and some local police now are in the process, they've already arrested people for impersonating ICE agents. And in one case, they were found to be people who were human traffickers, right? So they have already arrested people. And in some cases, people, it's domestic violence situations, that kind of thing. And so they're people, because they're not identifying themselves, they don't have a real badge, they're not saying this, it seems it puts them at risk. But if a whole group of people surrounded me with just those masks and such and tried to arrest me and throw me in an unmarked van.
It seems wrong, doesn't it?
I would lose my mind. And I would hope that people around me would do something. But people around you, they're not. I mean, one case, these kids, oh my God, it was heartbreaking. This woman was hugging a tree and her kids surrounded her. And the young boy said, "You can shoot me, but you can't shoot my mother. Don't shoot my mother. You want to shoot somebody, shoot me." Oh, my God. And it turns out they had the wrong woman. But these kids have to live the rest of their life with this, right, with that moment.
You know, there are some states that are trying or considering legislation to require ICE to not be masked and to identify themselves. But I'm not even clear if a state can do that, to override a federal agency's decision.
And even if they are, will it be followed?
Correct.
Barbara writes to us. We just have about 30 seconds. Barbara writes to us and says, when you have to travel an hour for an appointment with Social Security in order to receive your recently deceased spouse's benefits, when you spend almost an hour on hold in order to apply for benefits for an elderly parent while at the same time watch your tax dollars being spent on golf weekends for the president. I don't know. I guess if there aren't enough people working at the IRS, we can refuse to send in our federal income tax checks. We don't endorse that, Barbara, but I certainly understand the tenor of the letter. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll wrap up for this Thursday morning with our terrific group, Judy Patrick, Karen Riedel, and Teresa Bourgeois. And we welcome your letters. Last call for the letters. Keep them short and to the point. We can get to as many as we possibly can. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation with our roundtable panel after this short break.
equação me propõe. Computador me resolve.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our last segment with our terrific group of panelists. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's go to other topics. And this one we touched on earlier in the week, of course. This was after the, what's the word I'm looking for? Bizarre.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
The somewhat bizarre cabinet meeting that took place that was 1 hour 47 minutes long, which is available to watch in its entirety on YouTube by C-SPAN. And I had a choice last night of watching that or watching Jurassic Park, the original. And I did choose this. I chose the meeting, and I realized from what I remember about Jurassic Park, there really aren't that many differences. People get eaten up, and it's scary. So
you learned a lot about President Polk, though.
Yeah, I did. You're right. A lot about decor, which I didn't know.
And his gold tie matched his new gold draperies. 15
so,
minutes.
After a year of... That's not what we're going to talk about right now.
We're not talking about the draperies of President
Be happy about that. So after a year and a half of White House skepticism toward Kyiv and friendliness toward Moscow, President Donald Trump and top Republicans have shifted course, with the White House preparing to send additional weaponry to Ukraine and Congress moving to enact tough new sanctions on Russia. The change this week came as Trump's frustration mounted over Russian President Vladimir Putin's unwillingness to engage seriously in discussions about an end to his war on Ukraine. Trump vowed last year that he would move quickly to halt the conflict, but has been unsuccessful. I believe the conflict was to end before he even took his second term. A senior White House official said Wednesday that the president had now agreed to some Ukrainian requests for military aid based on a detailed list that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky handed him last month when they met in The Hague. On Capitol Hill, House Speaker Mike Johnson and Senate Majority Leader John Thune said Wednesday that they will try to pass legislation this month that would give Trump the ability to impose sanctions on buyers of Russia's energy exports. The vow came a day after Trump expressed uncharacteristically tough public anger toward Russian President Vladimir Putin, declaring that the leader throws a lot of BS, although he used the whole word. Karen.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for letting me start on this, because with foreign affairs, I keep trying to figure out what the strategy of this administration is. And I do think it the basis for everything we've seen is rooted in the policy that's usually called prioritization. And that is not a new policy. That is something that we first heard from the Obama administration. And that is that the United States, but give me a minute, right? That the United States needs to move its focus away from Europe, because Europe has the ability to defend itself, and shift our focus toward Asia, where the resources are that we want. So that's the basis for that. Obama had, and this came as a real shock to Europeans, especially the Germans, because, and let me tell you from my own experience, Europeans are deeply nostalgic about American leadership. And so am I, and I truly am. I'm deeply saddened by the loss of American leadership in the world. As a leader, and I'm not going to say the free world, but as the leader of the thinking behind the liberal world order, which I believe, and I hope you're going to join me in agreeing that it kept the world not safe, but it made it so much safer and so much less violent, because the system that was based on the assumption that economic interdependence. I'm not going to bomb the country that produces my cars. Is a really good basis for stability. International norms and rules are a really good basis for stability. Intergovernmental organizations like the United Nations help us find solutions. We're a really good way to keep us not entirely safe, but safer. And so I'm disappointed about this focus away from the liberal world order toward realist approaches to United States interests. But I understand that this is nothing new. This was the Obama administration, and frankly, Biden would have pursued it too had it not been for Russia's decision to invade Ukraine. Right, so that's the basis for this overall strategy that this administration is taking to foreign affairs. But here comes a president who's driven very much by his own interests. He came into the office promising the end to the Ukraine war within 24 hours, and he wanted to see it happen without any understanding how international relations works. Right, and that's where we see ourselves. And then I could spend several hours more talking about this, but this recent development over the last few days, pausing the shipment of weapons to Ukraine, with or without Trump's knowledge, and then several days later, an announcement that the shipment of some of these weapons is restarted, is not going to help the situation in Ukraine in the slightest. Ukraine has been not given any opportunity to develop a strategy with this continuously shifting U.S. policies. The European, and that's why I took such a long step backwards, the European countries have the ability to help Ukraine defend itself. But they are relying on this nostalgic assumption that the United States will eventually step up and see it through. But it doesn't look like they will. And so we're in this limbo, which is tragic for Ukraine, but very dangerous for the world.
Judy?
You know, apparently Trump had an unproductive phone call with Putin last week. And he's come to the conclusion that, you know, he can't really trust Vladimir Putin, even though you can't conduct international relations like you can a New York City real estate deal is the bottom line here. And whether or not Trump himself understands the global world order in a sophisticated way, I think it's all about he wants to win the Nobel Peace Prize. He wants to build resorts on the, you know, on the coast, the Gaza coast. Maybe put a couple of hotels in Russia. I think it's his, and then his toadies are taking advantage of him to achieve the kind of world order that they think is possible. And I just have to feel sorry for the MAGA supporters who are thinking, are we for Ukraine or are we against Ukraine? You know, they don't, you know, one day Donald Trump loves Vladimir Putin, the next day he doesn't. And those guys don't know what to do.
Well, we've discussed this in various forms on the show before about this was, I think we had this discussion in its entirety when we were talking about the quote unquote big, beautiful bill debate. And that Trump was going to exact revenge against those who did not toe the line on his agenda. And there were some members in the House and Senate Republicans who said, OK, but we're not really sure what that agenda is on any given moment. And I think so that sort of plays in here, too, where you're trying to toe the line, but you're not really sure what the line is.
Well, I think that this, just as it's the lack of clarity on the foreign policy agenda in Ukraine, a lack of clarity on the foreign policy agenda in China, but you compound that with the lack of clarity on the foreign policy agenda, the tariff policy, right? And so there's economic instability that causes both within our own country and around the world, as well as you know, the realignments that are happening around trade are not unlike the realignments that are happening around defense. because our lack of a clear and coherent foreign defense foreign policy, right? And as I'm repeating myself now, but it seems that people are shifting away from, look what Canada's response is. Now, they're still going to try to negotiate with us, but at the same time, they're looking for other partners. I think in Europe, I mean, Europe, I think, is realizing that the U.S. is not a consistent partner, particularly with Ukraine, which is so important to them. And so they are trying to gear up. One of the things that I found stunning, I looked at the Military Times story dated July 2nd about the Ukrainian arms freeze. And it says, a day after the White House confirmed that the U.S. had suspended military aid to Ukraine, the Pentagon's chief spokesperson said the decision stemmed from a larger review of America's military support for countries around the world. Quote, "We can't give weapons to everybody all around the world. We have to look out for America and defending our homeland," Sean Parnell said in his first standalone briefing. And then a spokesperson for the White House confirmed the news and said that the hiatus occurred after the Pentagon finished reviewing America's military aid to other countries, that, quote, "decision was made to put America's interests first." Well, isn't Ukraine part of America's interests? Right? Isn't that? I mean, it's an incoherent policy, because what are our global interests and why aren't we fighting for them?
We're going to let that hang in the air as we have to draw the segment to a close. My thanks to Teresa Bourgeois, Karen Riedel, and Judy Patrick. You're all wonderful. I appreciate you being here and sharing with us. We'll be back right after this.